Rabbi Yosi, Bavel, the big day, Chavonim, Eretz Yisrael, the big day, Pishtam, Meguhatzim. In Bavel, they liked colored clothing. In Eretz Yisrael, they liked Pishtan flax that were very well ironed, you know, and pressed. Okay, Tanya, Rabbi Huda, Omer, and the Rambam talks about Tachshitin. So far we've seen in the first Braita that's being quoted here, an idea that when it comes to the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, there may not be one particular action or way to accomplish it. You can accomplish it for men by drinking wine, for women by doing other types of things. If there are multiple methods or ways to accomplish a particular mitzvah, what does that suggest about the mitzvah?
It's subjective.
It's subjective, and if the mitzvah is subjective, it means that the real goal is emotional or goal-oriented, meaning it's not about performing a particular action. Rather, it's accomplishing a certain goal. The goal is v'samachta b'chagecha, to be happy. So if different people are going to have different ways to be happy, then we do that. Tanya Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says, b'zman shebeit hamikdash kayim ein simcha l'vebasar, shenemar v'zavachta shlamim v'achalta sham v'samachta l'fnei Hashem elokecha. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira connects the notion of simcha on Yom Tov not to the pasuk of v'samachta b'chagecha, but to v'zavachta shlamim v'achalta sham v'samachta l'fnei Hashem elokecha. Simcha is more connected to the eating of korbanot and the notion of being lifnei Hashem. Now, instead of shlamim, instead of korbanos, we now have yayin instead to do that. Right? The idea that ein simcha ela, right, implies that we're not dealing with something that's particularly goal-oriented, but that there is a particular method, a particular idea, right, a particular way that you're supposed to fulfill this mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. So just as a starting point, right, in the sources that the Gemara use to learn out the idea of Simchas Yom Tov, we have potentially two different paradigms. One that focuses on the goal of being b'simcha on regel, and the other that focuses more on the simcha that comes from a particular action of achila shlamim in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, or the drinking of wine, bizman she'ein beit HaMikdash kayim. So this already seems to point in the direction that Rav Lichtenstein is going to develop through a number of different halachot, that the notion of simcha on Yom Tov, the mitzvah of simcha on Yom Tov, is a unique kind of mitzvah in what exactly it is that we're trying to accomplish. So we'll try to show how Rav Lichtenstein himself developed that, and some of the implications to the distinction that he makes. So the Gemara that we saw a number of weeks ago, right before Pesach, about Arba Kosot, told us, I don't want to read the whole thing back together inside, but told us that if a person drinks all of the Arba Kosot, Bibat Achad, if you take four cups and you decide, you know what, I don't want to wait till the end of the Seder, I want to just, you know, I don't know, get drunk right away, or I want to get a little tipsy right away, or I just want to, I'm really, really hungry and thirsty, I just want to drink all of my wine or all of my grape juice, wine, let's assume, right away at the beginning of the meal. So if shasam bebasachas, we drink everything together, rav amar yidei yayin yatza, yidei arvakosos lo yatza. So you fulfilled your mitzvah of drinking wine, but you didn't fulfill your mitzvah of drinking four cups. So in the context of the mitzvah of dalakosot, and our analysis of that, we focus on the second part of Rav's statement, which is, what does it mean that you didn't fulfill your mitzvah of dalakosov? Tonight, we're going to focus on the first part of Rav's statement. What does it mean, yidei yayin yatza? What mitzvah did you fulfill? So someone want to read Rashbam, yidei yayin yatza. What did you fulfill? You want to jump in? Thank you. Right, so the Gemara that we started with, focusing on the end, well, right, focusing on the very beginning and on the starting point of the Gemara, but stopping before Rabbi Yehuda, that the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov is to drink wine. So if you drank the wine bebas achas, so you fulfilled your mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, but you didn't fulfill your mitzvah of arbakosos. This is not a Pesach obligation that you fulfilled. You fulfilled the generic idea that exists on all Yom Tovs, which is to drink wine and through that reach a state of simcha or be b'simcha on Yom Tov. So asks the Shagas Aryeh the following question on this Rashbam. The Gemara in Pesachim later on, and this is also a Gemara in Sukkah, learns from the pasuk Vayisa Ach Sameach, you should even be happy. L'rabos Lila Yontif Acharon, that it includes the last night of Yom Tov, the nights of the Yom Tov Acharon, of the last days. So ask the Gemara, O Eino El Yom Tov Arishon, maybe it's not referring to Yom Tov Acharon, maybe it's even coming to include the first night of Yom Tov. To say that there's a mitzvah of Simcha on the first night of Yom Tov, Kishehu Omer Ach Chilek. So when it says Ach, Vayisa Ach Sameach, so that distinguishes. And it tells us that there's going to be a certain nights of Yom Tov that are going to be part of where the mitzvah is going to apply, and others that aren't. So the obvious question is, well, how did you choose to distinguish? Why would you include the nights of the last Yom Tov as being part of the mitzvah of Simcha and not the first days? So answers the Gemara, Marba ani lele yontef ha'acharon, sheyesh simcha lefanav. So I include the last nights because there's simcha before, meaning chol ha'moed, right? There's a mitzvah of simcha, and the day after there's a mitzvah of simcha. So since it's enveloped as part of the chag, and the mitzvah of simcha applies on all ends, so it's going to apply a night also. Umotze ani lele yontef ha'rishon, she'ein simcha lefanav. And I exclude the first night from the mitzvah of simcha because the mitzvah of simcha doesn't apply beforehand. So this Gemara seems to suggest that what doesn't apply on the first night of Yom Tov? Mitzvah Simcha. How could we explain that? Why would that be true? Right? If the Mitzvah Simcha is connected to Karbanos and the bringing of Shlamim, the bringing of Shlamim are not done till the morning, and therefore, right, the Mitzvah Simcha wouldn't apply till the morning.
Why is it included on the last day?
Because the simcha already, because you're eating shlamim that you would have brought, right? Or eating chagigas and shlamim that you would have brought earlier, right? Meaning you had an opportunity to bring it on chag, and now you have time to eat it.
Sorry, but the first time of chag, wouldn't you have brought for Pesach? You bring the chagiga
before? I don't think so. Oh. Maybe the first night of Pesach would be a little bit different. I mean, that gets to kind of, you know, the Chag, the first night of Pesach really is would be the night before Yudalid, and the status of Yudalid is kind of a unique entity in Halakha.
But you don't eat on Yudalid, you eat it.
Right. I mean, is the eating of the Korban Pesach and the Chagiga on the night of Yudalid, is that really part of Chag HaMatzos, Chag HaPesach? There's all sorts of interesting questions about how to look at that. It's a great question, but I think it takes us a little bit further afield. Yeah. Can anyone anticipate what the Shag HaZariah's question is going to be, right, on the Rashbam? If we're talking about, and maybe this is part, maybe what you're getting to is part of the answer.
The mitzvah simcha, right. If there's no mitzvah simcha on the first night of Yom Tov.
Right. How could we say that on the first night when you drink wine, it's to fulfill the mitzvah simcha? Sounds like what?
I said the Shag HaZariah is amazing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So how could you say that the first night, how could you say that it's that you're yotze the mitzvah of simcha on the first night? If there is no mitzvah of simcha on the first night, so part of the answer maybe is not the direction Rav Lichtenstein goes. Maybe what Dr. Fleischman is getting at, which is that maybe the first night of Pesach is really unique, and that, you know, because you had korbanos beforehand, and because the yontif really started on Yudalit. That's not the direction the Shag HaZariah goes. That's not the direction of Lichtenstein's going to go here. But that's question number one. Question number two, and what's really interesting, just methodologically, is when Lichtenstein would give shir in yeshiva, his shir in yeshiva was very different than a traditional, yeshiva shir. What he would do is he would read the Gemara. He would raise different a priori possibilities about either we can understand this way, we can understand this way. If we understand this way, then this would be the implication, and then this would be that. And then he'd kind of build out a map and a structure around that. In his articles, written articles, Torah articles, Lichtenstein goes in the direction much more of like a classic Mechadish, where he asks a number of questions, brings out a yesod, a core idea, that answers that could potentially answer the question, and then shows how it plays itself out. It's just interesting on the difference between the way his written Torah articles work and the way his shiurim actually did. But nevertheless, even though on the surface the approach Rav Lichtenstein is taking to asking a bunch of questions and giving an answer is somewhat more typical, we'll see that the type of answer that he gives is very much indicative of the uniqueness of his own thought and approach. So that's question number one. Question number two, Rav Lichtenstein quotes from the Shagas Aryeh, is about Avelus. The Gemara in Brachos and Rishonim in Brachos talk about when Avelus on a Torah level or Ninus on a Torah level begins. And we end up concluding that the night after the Kfura, right, that Avelus already begins. That Avelus begins at night. So the Shagas Aryeh says, well, wait a minute. If we just learned that Simchas Yom Tov doesn't start until the day, and that Avelus begins already at night, so then how is it possible that you're not going to be able to have Avelus on Yom Tov? You should have Avelus on the night of Yom Tov, because Avelus kicks in already, and Simchas Yom Tov, the obligation to be B'Simcha on Yom Tov, doesn't start until the next morning. And we know from the Gemara in Moed Katan, which is quoted over here in the next source, that Avel in Onoeg Avilusa Berega, why doesn't an Avel practice his Avelus on Yom Tov? Shenema v'samachta b'chagecha, because of the mitzvah of Simcha. Right? So if the lack of Avelus on Yom Tov is connected to the mitzvah of Simcha, and the mitzvah of Simcha doesn't begin until the morning of the first day, it doesn't exist on the first night, so then why don't we say that Avelus is knowing already on the first night?
Sorry, aren't they bringing two different psukim for two different things?
What do you mean?
One they're learning from Vahit Av Sameach, and the other pasuk they're bringing for the Zerach Moraz V'Samach B'Chagacha.
Well, all of these psukim are defining for us what, when, how, and to what extent the mitzvah of Simcha applies. Meaning, yes, there are multiple psukim that are teaching us different things, but they're all helping us better understand the quality of the mitzvah and the nature of the mitzvah of Simcha on Yom Tov. Meaning, we're assuming at this point at least that it's all talking about the same core halacha. Right? That there's a mitzvah of Simcha on Yom Tov, and all the psukim that discuss and describe that mitzvah are going to help us understand how it works and when it applies. So we have one pasuk that teaches us Vayisa Ach Sameach, to teach us that it's limited and it doesn't apply on the first night of Yom Tov and only starts during the day. And another pasuk that teaches us, right, the core mitzvah of Bameh Mesamcha B'Yayin, and that even in Moed Katan, I'm not sure if this was your intention in the question, but in Moed Katan, we're not using the pasuk to teach us that it's Docha Avelus. The pasuk teaches us that there's a mitzvah of Simcha. And once we know that there's a mitzvah of Simcha, so Asi Asei D'Rabim, V'Dachi Asei D'Yachid. Right? The mitzvah of Simcha that applies to everybody in the community equally, pushes aside one individual person's mitzvah. So that's question number two. Question number three, Mishnah Moed Katan brings a debate between Tanaim. What is the status of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur when it comes to Avelus? Right, so what does Rabbi Gamliel say? Gamliel Omer, Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim kiregalim. The Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is the same as a regel. V'chachamim omerim lo k'direzeh v'lo k'direzeh, l'ateres kiregalim. Forget about Shavuos, we're not focusing on that now. Rosh Hashanah v'Yom Kippur k'Shabbos. So Chachamim argue and say that Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is more like Shabbos, meaning that you are not knowing Avelus, but it doesn't... It is Ola Leminyan, right? You're just not knowing, as opposed to Regalim, which are not Ola Leminyan and could potentially be Mevatel Avelus. So, ask Rav Lichtenstein, what exactly is the Machloket here? Right? On Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, so presumably there's no mitzvah of Simcha, or the mitzvah of Simcha, right? There's no mitzvah of Simcha on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So if what's Docha Avelus is, because it's V'samachta B'Chagecha, and that idea is learned from Sukkot to Pesach, and quoted in the Torah on Sukkot and on Shavuos, but it's not connected to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So where do we get the idea that there's a notion of Simcha on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? And if there isn't a notion of Simcha on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, how could we possibly say that Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim Kirigalim? So in other places, Rabbi Lichtenstein and his student, my other Rabbi Rosenzweig, say that no, the paradigm that allows for there not to be Avelos on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is different than Regal, meaning even though the Mishnah says it's Kirigalim, it's similar, but it's not based on Simcha, it's based on being Lifnei Hashem in the presence and being in the presence of God, which is the context in which Avelot is not appropriate. But that's not the direction Rav Lichtenstein is going to work with here. Someone had a question? Okay. So, says Rav Lichtenstein, well, if we're seeing all these places where there seems to be a notion or a concept of Simchas Yom Tov being applied, even when we would a priori imagine that it's not there, either the first night of Yom Tov, right, or on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So what's the classic Brisker way of dealing with two contradictory sources or the fact that something seems to be there when it's not supposed to be there? Really? Right, there are two aspects. There are two notions to Simchas Yom Tov, right? And that there are different components of what Simchas Yom Tov really is all about. So let's read Rav Lichtenstein's words. Dinira shebesimchas Yom Tov ne'emru shtei halachot. Mitzad echad, on one hand, hi mitzvah hamitcha yeves mipa'ad hamoed. It's a mitzvah that's obligated because it's a Yom Tov. Meaning, on Yom Tov, one of the things you need to do is be Simcha, or do an act of Simcha. U'mitkayamet b'miskarto, and it is observed in the framework of Yom Tov. B'doma l'netilas lulav u'lachilas matzah. Meaning, the core goal of the mitzvah is to do this action. When do I need to do this action? When it's Yom Tov. Yom Tov, or these particular dates, create a responsibility for me now to do specific actions. Mi'idach, on the other hand, he eino rak pu'ula bodedet hamitbatzad betchumei hamoed. It's not only an individual, isolated act that is fulfilled in the context of the chag, of the moed, ela pi'ilot, rather, it's a set of activities, hamid rachashopo, that happen on it, the hamiyuadot lahadbiya alav chotem, and that are intended to establish a certain stature, a certain feel to the day. Linsoch bot chanim, to put in it different substance, content. Ulahamik et sivyono ki yom tov, and to deepen its stature as a yom tov. Meaning, right, there are certain aspects of yom tov that are not just about particular actions, but right, they determine or establish the day in a certain way. Just like the things that are part of the concept of Mikra Kodesh. Imeser Malacha, Imachal Mishtek, Susnikia, Vimatzarat Latorah Latfila, right? And these are all things that could be Shirim on their own. Right? The Iser Malacha on Yom Tov, the fact that you're supposed to eat differently, you're supposed to dress differently, you're supposed to focus, the davening, the laning, the tefillah on Yom Tov are different. Those are all not individual acts on their own, like lulav or like matzah. Those are things that we would look at as being, right, this is what makes the day a Yom Tov, what makes it a unique day, what gives it
identity.
Right, in the article he uses one of my favorite Rav Lichtenstein words, which is gushpanka. I don't know exactly how to translate that. It gives it substance, it gives it something. That's just a great word, gushpanka. So he's saying that that's also part of what Simchas Yom Tov is. Mityachasot, so all these things relate to l'chor l'itzuv hayom, to establishing the day, l'kviyat of yom, and determining its nature, hu hadin l'simcha. So Wilkinson's saying, right, that when it comes to Simcha, right, and more broadly what he's saying here is that when it comes to mitzvot, there are two different roles that particular actions, ritual activities that we engage in can accomplish. One is where the ritual is significant on its own right, and the ritual itself is meant to be meaningful. Right? The goal of the ritual is to do this particular action, and this particular action on its own has significance. Other times, when we're doing mitzvot on particular days, right, the goal is more than just doing an individual action, but it's supposed to come together with other things, activities or lack of activities that we do that paint a bigger picture and that relate to something broader and that define the day.
Is he saying just a specific action or a specific action that sort of relates to the specific moed that you're involved in, like Nikibas Lulav?
So we'll get there next. Okay. Now he's talking about the mitzvah of Simcha, and he's saying that even the generic idea that exists on most Yom Tovim, that of Simchas Yom Tov, is not quite the same, right, as all the other mitzvot that exist on a chag. On chag, we have a mitzvah to eat matzah, to pick up a lulav, to sit in the sukkah. All of those things are individual acts, except sukkah is unique, right? We spent a lot of time talking about this when we were learning sukkah. Sukkah may be something more encompassing, too. And interesting, well, we'll get back to the other mitzvot. But he's saying, right, that one aspect of simcha is that also, that one of the things you need to do on Yom Tov is to enjoy yourself through eating, through drinking. Right? But that's the particular action itself is of significance. Another reason why we do simcha is the nature of the day. So now how does that go back and answer the question? So he claims that even though, right, the mitzvah of simcha that's connected to achilas shlamim, so which aspect of simcha is that going to be?
First.
Right, that's going to be the act of eating or drinking something particular at a particular moment on Chag. It's commemorating the shlamim that was eaten. It's one aspect of the what you need to do on Yom Tov, which is to eat a particular korban or to eat in a special type of holier way. So that is the mitzvah that only exists during the day. But that doesn't mean that there's no idea of simcha at night. At night, there still is this broader notion of simcha, which is not limited to a particular action, but rather is about creating a certain nature of the day. So since the day is still defined as a yom simcha, right, that's why drinking wine is still going to help fulfill that and create that, meaning anything that you do, right, it means a quantity is going to be much less important. It's less about doing a certain number of actions, right? Both on the, and we'll see this in other contexts in a minute, both on the minimal side, meaning if you do less, and on the more side, meaning the more that you eat and drink and do things that bring about simcha on Yom Tov, the more you're fulfilling that mitzvah. That's why, even at night, if you drink more wine, so you're yotze mishum simchas Yom Tov.
I don't understand really his second question, because the definition of that of the yontif is, or could be defined, not what happened right now, but what's happening that day.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the fact that the next day you bring your shlamim, or the next day you're using a lulav and esrog, defines the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the night before you haven't done it yet, but the mitzvah that you do the next morning defines that day, lamafreya.
So
I don't want to say lamafreya.
Well,
it just defines the whole day as a particular day that does
absolutely
that.
If you're looking at it if you're looking at it as, right, this mitzvah being a mitzvah that's about the nature of the day and about the day as being a Yom Simcha.
Right.
And that's exactly what he's saying.
But I'm saying, but the question itself is not a good question. In other words, why don't you wait till the next knows that night you should be knowing Avelis anyway, right? That's what he's asking.
Well, he's asking that, and he's asking why is Rashbam talking about...
Yeah, but that question, I'm saying, is not a real question, because the nature of the day is simcha because of what happens during that day. Maybe not to this minute.
So he was saying the Gemara, because the Gemara seems to imply that there's no simcha at night.
Right.
So what you're saying is, even though you shake lulav in the day, it tells you that at night there was simcha already, but if the Gemara is implying that ach excludes simcha at night, your question is on the Gemara.
Okay.
Right, so he's saying the exclusion...
I'm not arguing with you. No, I understand.
He's saying the exclusion of simcha at night points to the fact that simcha is indeed a individual action mitzvah, meaning it's not something that becomes part of the definition of the day. Right, so Rav Lichtenstein is saying that, well, yes, that's one aspect of simcha. One aspect of simcha on Yom Tov is that you should do an act of simcha. The same way that you pick up a lulav, the same way that you have to eat a matzah, the same way that you have to send a sukkah, you have to do an act of simcha. But that doesn't mean that what you're talking about is not true. Right? I mean, this is still a day of Yom Tov, a Mikra Kodesh. And the same way in which part of Mikra Kodesh means that I dress differently, it means that I eat differently, it also means that I am in a status or in a state of simcha. And I do things to encourage that simcha.
Yeah, the problem with that is also is that what's causing the simcha is not the day itself, but what you're doing on that day.
Who says?
That's what you just said. Because you define it by the fact that you're eating differently, you're dressing differently.
No, those are all expressions of the uniqueness of the day.
Meaning, but you said that's what causes the simcha.
What causes it and how it's expressed are not necessarily the same. Meaning, it is a mikra kodesh. It is a holy day. What makes it a holy day? Right, the fact that I don't go to work, the fact that I eat differently on that day, the fact that I'm more relaxed, the fact that I daven differently, meaning, if it's something that is about the nature of the day, then it's going to be reflected in multiple different ways over the course of a lot of different actions.
So what you're saying is then that the fact that you said that you don't work that day and you eat better that day, it's because of the yontif, not because of what you do to enhance your simcha.
Yes. 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 Those are all.
Okay.
All those things are different ways in which we relate to the Mikra Kodesh. And Rav Chassin is arguing that part of the definition of Mikra Kodesh is a day of Simcha, right? That, which means that kind of all those things end up going all together. Meaning, creating Simcha is equivalent to creating Mikra Kodesh. Because that's a Mikra Kodesh and a day of Simcha are the same thing, is what Rav Chassin is arguing.
But see, are you creating the Simcha, or is the Simcha there on its own? In other words, if you didn't drink wine, and you didn't put on new clothes, and you went to work anyway, or you did some kind of work that you normally could do on Yontif, which is the same thing that you do like
that. So the Kedusha of the day is there. You're
right.
Not interacting
so,
with
so
it
So the fact that you're not doing anything differently on the Yontif than you're doing on Tuesday.
You're on call.
No, on Yontif.
Oh.
You go into the hospital. Like, work on the computer.
Right.
It feels like a Tuesday, but it's Shabbos. Right.
Right. So, I mean, that's onus. That's onus, but like...
No, I'm not saying is it permitted.
Right.
It's the Simcha.
Right. No, that's definitely challenging. You know, I think you're right. I think the day is there, but just like we've been talking about with Kiddush, how...
I'm saying it's irrelevant to what you act or what you do. That's what I'm saying.
Yes, but that's not the ideal. I mean, the Torah, the mitzvot
ideal.
Of the Torah and the Isurim and mitzvot of the Torah are meant to force us to interact with the day in a certain way and to treat the day a certain way. And it's our responsibility to treat the day as a Yom Kodesh. How do we do that? Right? By being besimcha, by eating in a certain way, by drinking a certain way.
I think it's a question of facilitating the simcha of the Yom. And these things are independent of the mitzvah. It's a personalized nature.
That's my point.
So we're going to take it closer to kind of what you're asking when we talk about the mitzvot of the day in just a minute. But Rav Lichtenstein also claimed that this could explain the debate between Rabbi Gamliel and Chachamim. At least, you know, this is one way to explain the debate between Rabbi Gamliel and Chachamim about Rosh Hashanah. Even though on Rosh Hashanah there is no mitzvah of achilat, there's no shlamim, and therefore there's no special mitzvah of simcha in its individual focused way, that the nature of the day is still one of Mikra Kodesh, is still one, therefore, of Simcha. And that's why the Rav Yah quotes the Minog of the yeshiva regarding Nusach HaTevilah, that on Rosh Hashanah we still say, Mo'adim l'simcha chagim l'zmanim l'sason es yom hazikaron hazeh. How do we know that? Shehare Eile Mu'adei Hashem Darish Inyana V'sof Inyana V'idaber Moshe As Mu'adei Hashem Akol Inyana Apesach V'Atzeres Rosh Hashanah V'Yom Kippurim V'Sukkos V'Shmini Atzeres Kulu Ikri La'adadi L'grosa Mu'adei Hashem Mikra Kodesh. Right, since it's in the Parshas Hamo'adim, Dim, it means that the essential nature of the day is fundamentally the same, and therefore, even though the term Simcha is not used when it comes to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, once we've learned that whenever we're talking about a Jewish holiday, a Jewish Mikra Kodesh, that means a day of Simcha, not a day of Avelot, and not a day of Tanis. So therefore, we can apply that same understanding of what the essence of Mikra Kodesh should look like to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur as well.
What you're saying is we learn for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur from the other Moad.
From the fact that it's in the same Parshas HaMoados.
So if it wouldn't say specifically for the other, let's say that V'samachta B'chagecha, you wouldn't have the Din of Simcha.
You need to have some kind of source.
In other words, if it weren't for the fact that Hashem tells you to be Misameach, you wouldn't be Misameach and Yontif. Besides, you'd bring the Shlomim and you're eating better and you're dressing better.
Yeah, but it would mean that it means that you could, if you're in Avelot, so you could be in Avelot on Yontif. And that may be Doha.
But maybe, I'm saying, all the mitzvahs of the day create a simcha without having to...
Maybe, but what's your source?
It seems to me that you do that... So you said, in other words, because you said that Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, you learn it from those other Moadim, that means that on their own you wouldn't have that, despite all the mitzvahs that you have on those days?
Maybe you'd go the other way. Maybe you'd say that the Moadim in this virtual world
would
are
not
much more solemn days. Yeah, you dress nicely, you have a meal.
So, and that's solemn.
Yeah. Could be.
It's not about wine.
It's not about having fun, enjoying.
Right.
You wouldn't have the gemaras about almonds and nice dresses and whatever. You'd have
just daven and
kula l'Hashem.
Yeah. Well, right. That's
maybe that's important
for us too. Maybe that itself is real simple for some people. Yeah. So that's kind of the first half of Rav Chassin Shaul. I'll very briefly mention just what he does in the second half, and that is kind of similar to what this end of the table has been getting at for a little bit, which is if we focus even on the mitzvah of the day, he says, so far he's tried to prove how the generic mitzvah that exists on all the chagim, namely the mitzvah of simcha, represents both a particular action and mitzvah to do, as well as a broader theme or idea that's supposed to impact our attitude towards the day as a whole and reflect the way in which we treat the day and the types of things that we do. He says, well, what if we look at even the specific mitzvah that we're supposed to do on the Chag that seem like they're only about, right, doing the action? So he tries to argue that if we look at the different mitzvah that exists on Yom Tov and Chagim, we can find echoes or notions or ideas that beyond just these things being individual mitzvah that we're supposed to do as individual activities on Yom Tov, that these mitzvah too define the day. These mitzvah too are part of what creates the Mikra Kodesh, are part of what enhances the Kedushat Hayom. So, for example, when it comes to shofar, right, he points to midrashim that quote the idea of here. If you look at the Meiri says shelo amar tar b'shofar ulekachtam lachem kenyana amar belulav ad shenilma minyanu lekichal koacha v'acha kamo shadarshu belulav. The Torah doesn't say directly that everyone should take their own individual lulav, their individual shofar, like it does for a shofar. Ela zichron trua v'yom trua. Rather, the Torah says zichron trua yelachem, yom trua yelachem. It's focused much more on the memory, the goal, the type of day that the truas are supposed to bring. And the Meiri connects this to a more technical question about the brachos rishonos, brachos achronos, which I didn't completely go into myself when I was looking through the article. But this idea that shofar is not just about a particular action, but about creating a yom truah, is something that he explores, Wilkinson explores in a couple of different ways regarding the mitzvah of tekiat shofar. If the goal of the mitzvah is more than just sounding a particular number of kolot on Rosh Hashanah, then number one, we can understand why you are allowed to, for whatever reason, add more kolot and blow more Right? Add to the tekiyot. Miyushav and tekiyot. Ma'umad and have sfeikos about what the right tekiyot. And it's not a problem of Bal Tosef. Right? Because Yom Tru'a Yelachem. Yom Tru'a Yelachem tells us, right, that the more you blow, the better. Meaning that this is a day where you're supposed to be blowing the shofar, or as representative of crying, or as representative for tshuva, whatever it's supposed to be, right, that notion expands the idea and tells us that your blowing doesn't have to be limited specifically to the formal acts of tekios that have been established by the Torah and Chazal. It could even go beyond that. And on the flip side, right, he talks about chatzi shir. And there's a question when it comes to mitzvah, whether there's any value, any inherent value to eating a chati kezayis of matzah. Right? Or I don't know, you can't really half pick up your lulav. But he says that even though when it comes to mitzvot as a whole, we say that a chati shir is meaningless because the mitzvah is the particular action of eating matzah. And if you only ate a chati kezayis of matzah, that's not eating matzah. When it comes to shofar, there's indication that even if you just blow one kol, even if you blow something on Rosh Hashanah, that's a value, and then that is inherently something that's valuable, and it plays itself out in a couple of different ways. So he claims that that's also an indication of the fact that the mitzvah of shofar is not just about formally performing a particular act, but it's about contributing to the nature and the significance or the meaning of the day.
So one tekiah is not a half a shear.
One tekiah is not a half a shear, right? It's a little bit. It's something. It's accomplishing something. It's not accomplishing the full mitzvah, because the full mitzvah is to do the full tekiah and to do the full action.
But there's this other aspect
that it's a part of. It tries to develop something similar, right, very briefly, when it comes to matzah and maybe sukkah as well, claiming that even when it comes to the psukim by matzah, you have two different psukim in describing the mitzvah of matzah. You have on the one hand Be'er of Tochlu Matzah, which is where we learn that it's only really the first night of Pesach that we have a chiyuv d'arayta matzah. On the other hand, many psukim, including the one in Devarim, say Shivas Yamim Tochal Matzos, right? And that's the basis for the famous position of the Gra, who says that even though there's no obligation to eat matzah the other 6 days of Pesach, whenever you do, you're mekayim a mitzvah. So where does this come from? What's this idea that there? Why would there be a kiyum a mitzvah and not an obligation? So says Rav Lichtenstein, that's part of eschag hamatzos. It's chag hamatzos. It's the chag that is defined by eating matzah. So every time you eat matzah on Pesach, you are adding, you're contributing to this being Chag HaMatzos. It can't be Chag HaMatzos, or meaning it is less of a Chag HaMatzos, if you don't eat matzah. So every time you do something that interacts with the holiday in the way it's supposed to be interacted with, namely through eating of matzah, not only, even if you're not fulfilling the technical obligation to eat matzah, you are contributing to what defines the day and to what makes it unique.
Does the same apply for naps on Shabbos?
Yeah, maybe, right? It's adding to Oneg, right? So he uses this idea to explain a very, very strange and far-fetched sifra at the end, which we'll conclude with before just one very brief machshava idea that I think comes out of this in terms of understanding Rav Aharon and you know, at least to me, what he represents. So Sifra has a very strange Havamina. So the fact that it says on the 15th day of this month, that is Chag HaMatzos, so that's when you eat matzah. We learn from that, Yom Zeh Tal Matzah, Ve'en Chag HaSukkos Tal Matzah. That's only Chag HaMatzos that you need to eat matzah, and not Chag HaSukkos. Ve'halodinhu, right, shouldn't we say a Kal V'chomer? Uma im zeh, this is one of those great like Kal V'chomer moves. Ma im zeh she'ein ta'un sukkah, ta'un matzah. If you need to eat matzah on a day when you don't have to have sukkah, zeh she'ta'un sukkah, ain't no din she'ta'un matzah. If you need a sukkah, well then obviously we should have to package throw in the matzah too. Talmud lomar zeh chag ha'matzot zeh. Zeh ta'un matzah, v'ein chag ha'sukkah ta'un matzah. And then we do the exact same thing for Chag HaSukkot. Hazeh Chag HaSukkot, zeh ton sukkah, vein Chag HaMatzah ton sukkah. Aludinu, ma'im zeh she'en ton matzah ton sukkah, Chag HaMatzah she'en ton matzah, in addition ton sukkah. Of course you should need a sukkah on Pesach. Like, oh my gosh, like, wouldn't that be horrible? Right? Like, yeah. I mean, it's hard enough to like be limited in what you eat on Pesach and where you eat on Sukkot. Imagine a holiday where you had both, right? Talmud Lomar has zeh chag asukos tan sukkah vein chag amatzah tan sukkah. So says Rav Lichtenstein, if the only notion, again, and this is rejected, the maskana, it's rejected, but to him, you know, this builds out the concept, which is that if I believe that the only value of matzah or the only value of sukkah was the commemorative act that it does in remembering the holiday of Pesach, or remembering the holiday of Sukkot, then how could I possibly imagine, why would I want to commemorate us leaving Egypt on Sukkot? But if I believe that these activities, beyond just commemorating, being a zecher, like we talked about with Dalet Kosor and Aseva, being like a zecher l'cheiros, being an action that reminds us of something that happened in the past, a particular action that's significant on its own, if the action also creates a certain culture or nature of the day, enhances the day, so then I can understand why, right, on other Mikra'i Kodesh, the same thing would apply. Now, he says, and he admits it's a little bit of a stretch, because I still recognize the idea that the nature of the day on Sukkot and what we're trying to accomplish and what we're commemorating on the Mikra Kodesh and the holiday of Sukkot is not the same as Pesach. But, right, there is a notion that really all of this is about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, and all of this is about recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship with Am Yisrael, and how he took us out, and all of the holidays are really around different parts of the agricultural cycle. So there is a certain notion of generic Yom Tov, and generic kind of activities that commemorate Yitzhak Mitzrayim and our relationship with God, that I might have said are valid touch points for contributing to the distinction of these days as being days about remembering God, remembering our relationship with Him, remembering our past, remembering the history. And I can imagine possibly bringing one to the other.
I think another, just like not related approach to the Sifra, more narrowly focused, just like the two holidays it brings in are specifically Pesach and Sukkot. And the Sifra may be touching on the Teslav. You might think Pesach and Sukkot are like exactly the same, and therefore, when you look at the narrow actions of matzah, sukkah, like they should carry over. So the Sifra comes to tell you, no, while there is exertion of Tesfav, they still maintain their distinction.
Right. So when we learned Tesfav, we talked about the kind of strangeness of moving one to the other, and kind of maybe what that teaches us about bringing over some aspects of Pesach to Sukkot or Sukkot to Pesach. Here, Rav Lichtenstein is speaking about it more in a broader perspective, where even if we're not looking to bring elements of Pesach to Sukkot or Sukkot to Pesach, he's saying maybe from a different angle, it shows us more that these mitzvot have a generic aspect to them, a generic aspect in building a certain nature of the day and a certain concept of Yom Tov. I think that the lumdus of this particular shir, to me at least, is very much resonates with me as being so much of who Rav Lichtenstein was, and the core of kind of what I, and I think, you know, many people who learn from him got. On the one hand, right, Rav Lichtenstein was an extreme medakdik b'mitzvot, very careful about every individual action. Every individual action has significance. Every individual action has to be kept with scrupulence, the attention to detail, the carefulness that one has to have to the details in our life, and to the details and the way in which we relate to mitzvot. No compromise could possibly be had in that. And that's one aspect of Avodas Hashem. One aspect of Avodas Hashem for Rav Aaron was just taking advantage of and being very careful about every individual gemara, every individual halacha, every individual kiyama mitzvah, every individual relationship with other human beings. But part of what made Rav Aaron unique is that that careful diktuk b'mitzvot, like I spoke about at the commemoration we had right after he passed away a couple of years ago, was part of a miksha achas, like the menorah. You know, the details, the prachim and the gevim, and the intricate details that were part of the menorah and that were part of the tapestry of Rav Lichtenstein's Avodas Hashem. For him, it also, everything was part of this bigger picture. Everything was part of creating something bigger than just individual actions. And the same way in which these mitzvot and the idea of Simchat Yontif that he's talking about here are not just individual mice and mitzvot, but he's trying to show how they create a certain tzivyon, an ofi, their ma'anik ma'amad. They give depth and power and complexity to days. For Rav Aaron, that's really was what he taught us Torah and mitzvot should really be all about also. And that it's not just individual things on their own, but how being able to see it as part of a bigger picture, as how everything interacts with each other and how it creates this broader notion of what it means to be an Oved Hashem and what it means to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and with Am Yisrael. So that was that I think was very much what made him unique. I remember one of the sichot really spoke to me as we kind of are in Yom HaTzmaut week as well here is the end of my Shana Bet, Parsha Shlach. He was talking about Ron was talking about the difference between living in Eretz Yisrael and living in Chutz Laretz, and he compared it to the mitzvah of Tzitzis, where the psukim describe how uzachartem osa osam uzachartem as mitzvah Hashem vasisam osam. So the mefarshim debate how exactly is it that seeing tzitzis is going to help you remember all of the different mitzvot. He said that Rashi and Ramban take two different approaches that really represent different approaches to what inspires people and what brings them closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One is Rashi says that what is it that we remember? We're doing math. We're doing gematria, right? And there's tzitzis and gematria, 613, 608, 605. I don't remember exactly. You add the strings and you add the knots, and that gets you to 613. So Clinton said, this is kind of like, put it on an artistic level, to like a point, pointillism, where there's just a lot of different dots, and those different dots is what gets you inspired. And he said that in many ways is what he feels like is the paradigm of Avodas Hashem and religious worship in Chutz Laretz, where we have our shul, we have our school, we have certain points of Kedusha and certain points of religious activity, but then there's a lot of space in between. The Ramban talks about the idea of kol, and it was a chartem of kol mitzvot Hashem hatcheles dom alayam, Doma l'arkiya, doma l'kisei akavod, how somehow looking at the blue broadens our mind and our way of thinking, and from the blue, specific blue that's on the tzitzis, we think of something bigger, which is the yam, we think of something even bigger than that, which is the rakia, we think of something even bigger than that, which is the kisei akavod, meaning the ability for us to broaden our thinking when we do mitzvot to something that's much more than just a particular action that we're doing, but that's something that's part of a whole. Olson talked about that as being really the paradigm of religious life in at least for him in Eretz Yisrael, and how in Eretz Yisrael a person has the ability to really see that bigger picture more and to live religious life less as compartments and more as a whole. So I hope that as we remember Rav Lichtenstein and his teachings and what made him unique. Whether we can live that, whether we live that life in Eretz Yisrael or we live that life in Chutz Laretz, right, we're able to recognize the value of that Maisa Mitzvah, but also of the Ofi Hayom, the Kedusha Hayom, and the kind of bigger picture that it's all meant to connect.
Yashikola. Yashikola. Thank you.